This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for January 10th, 2018. On today's show, we're going to be diving into a bunch of news, including MoviePass, Colin Trevorrow's Star Wars Episode 9 pitch, the possibility of romance in that film, Christian Bale's thoughts on Terminator Salvation, Black Panther advanced ticket sales, and in the spoiler room, we'll talk about some surprising Westworld casting, as well as we'll have more conversation on Rey's heritage from Star Wars The Last Jedi. But we'll give you a heads up on the spoilers there. This is Peter Strada, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And Slash Film writer Y Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
So let's just get into it, guys. I know we've been talking about MoviePass for a while now. I know people are either very interested in this or probably getting tired of us talking about MoviePass. The whole industry is kind of trying to figure out how they're going to make money on this service that, you know, is basically $9.99 a month and lets you see, you know, upwards of 30 movies a month. So, Ben, we're starting to get a peek behind the curtain of what's going on here. What do we know?
Yes. So recently, MoviePass reached 1.5 million subscribers, with 500,000 of those coming in the last month alone. So that's a pretty impressive statistic for MoviePass and their subscriber numbers there. Last month, we talked about how MoviePass had signed a marketing and distribution deal with a mysterious independent movie distribution company, and we were wondering what that would be and who that was and what's going on. So there is an email that went out from MoviePass to its members that basically announces this partnership between MoviePass and I, Tonya, the new movie from Neon, which is the distribution company that was co-founded by Alamo Drafthouse head Tim League. So Neon was formed early last year. They released movies like Ingrid Goes West and Colossal last year. They're also responsible for I, Tonya. So the this email that MoviePass sent out, basically they're sending this offer out to their members that says, hey, if you go see I, Tonya in theaters sometime in the next few days, we're going to automatically enter you into a contest to win 10 annual MoviePass subscriptions. So this is the first time that we've seen a MoviePass ad being sort of broadcast, sent out to their membership on this level before. And it seems like that independent movie distribution company that was rumored to, or, you know, that was all mystery and veiled in shadow last month, is it probably Neon. I reached out to MoviePass to see if they had any sort of official statement on that. Haven't heard back yet, so I'll keep you guys updated. But
you haven't heard back from MoviePass? What a
shock.
I have not.
Yeah, I know.
I know so many people, by the way, that have tried to contact MoviePass's customer service and have, you know, gotten nowhere, or, you know, are communicating with customer service reps and it's like, you know, three times translated, doesn't make sense of responses. So I just wanted to mention that they have the worst customer service.
So this is the first time, you know, Peter, you mentioned in the beginning of this, and sort of the setup is like, what, you know, the industry is wondering how MoviePass is going to remain like a viable company, basically. And this advertising aspect is part of the way that they're going to make money, at least in the short term, until they gather enough subscribers to sell the information to, you know, other advertisers and things like that. So they have all sorts of long-term plans, but I'm looking at this as sort of like the next phase for MoviePass. And now that they've finally sent out this first, you know, big email blast that directly ties them to a movie that's in theaters now, actively trying to convince their membership to go see it, this seems like the next step in their process.
I just wonder what kind of effect this will have on the box office, because, you know, they're basically pushing people to go see this movie in a 1 week period, and they're basically giving away, like, you know, product worth like $800. And I'm sure Neon's paying quite a penny to, you know, for this test trial, but it'll be interesting to see this next week at the box office if you can see a sizable spike just from, you know, MoviePass's $1.5 million subscribers.
Yeah, and we talked about that, I think it was last month as well. Like, they have released these numbers, you know, they crunched a bunch of data and figured out that MoviePass themselves are, like, directly responsible for, you know, 10% of certain movies' opening weekend grosses. So they definitely have a proven track record when it comes to improving a movie's performance at the box office. So we'll see if that happens with I, Tonya this week.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Star Wars. Colin Trevorrow's Star Wars Episode 9, we will never see it. Obviously, he's been replaced on the project by J.J. Abrams. But HT, you wrote up this article. Apparently, he pitched Daisy Ridley an idea for Episode 9, and it brought Daisy Ridley to tears?
Yeah, so that's the extent of it, actually, because this story is told through a very long grapevine. It's essentially Saturday Night Live cast member Bobby Moynihan is telling this story, and he was at an SNL after party with Daisy Ridley and Colin Trevorrow, where I think the two of them first met. And apparently he saw Colin Trevorrow and Daisy Ridley go into a corner, and Colin was giving Daisy his pitch for Star Wars Episode 9. And Bobby Moynihan couldn't catch what the pitch actually was, but it was something that was so emotional that it moved Daisy Ridley to tears. Whether it was tears of joy over its poignancy or horror over how awful it was, we'll never know, because this is a pitch that will probably be kept under tight lid by Disney in their vault for years to come, until we see a tell-all book, or maybe a booklet of some sort that goes in like a special edition of Episode 9 20 years from now.
Now, I know you guys like to give jabs at Colin Trevorrow, but the likelihood of it being so horrible that it brought her to tears sounds unlikely.
I know, I joke.
But it's actually interesting, because, you know, so many people didn't want Colin to do this third film. And coming off Last Jedi, I've actually been seeing a lot of people on Twitter kind of, it seems like people have turned on J.J. Abrams. And it seems like people are like, I'm seeing tweets of like, people would have rather seen what Colin would have done, because it might have been different, where J.J. Abrams will probably be, you know, more in line with what Force Awakens was. I don't know. Have you guys had any, like, what do you think could possibly bring Daisy Ridley to tears, but, you know, story-wise, for a third installment? I mean, it's obviously something that's not going to happen anymore, because JJ is doing it. But do either of you have any elevator pitches for me?
God, I certainly don't. HT, do you have anything saved in the bank there?
Not anything specific. I'm guessing it might have something to do with perhaps Leia's arc and how he tells her, or like, brings about an end to her arc or storyline or something.
That's a good point too, because Carrie Fisher was still alive at that point, probably.
Yeah, it was, because Leia was supposed to have a huge, substantial role in Colin Trevorrow's original pitch or vision of Episode 9. So I'm guessing that the movie had a lot to do with her. But, you know, since her tragic passing, that vision probably would not work at all, just logistically and plot-wise as well.
Very good call. I didn't even think about that. But this isn't the last Star Wars story we have today. We have a couple. We'll have something in the spoilers. But right now, I want to talk about Rey and the possible her possible romance future. HT, is she going to – is there a love in the air between her and Poe or Finn?
All right. So I know I'm one of the very few people who saw a very – powerful spark between Rey and Poe in their brief meeting at the end of Star Wars Last Jedi. But I am a shipper and I was very anti Rey Kylo Ren, so I'm just kind of holding on to this, like, the tiny threads of this one interaction that they have. And so basically when they meet in Last Jedi, this is going to be a little spoilers for Last Jedi, it's the first time that they meet in the franchise. And when they introduce each other, she says, "I'm Rey," and he says, "I know." So this is what causes, I'm going to interpret this as a blush because she smiles really happily. But I really like that there's some vague parallels between the "I know" line between Han and Leia. So that was something that sort of got my brain working.
I would argue that she's blushing because she has grown up as a no one on Jakku, never thought she'd be anyone, and now people are hearing the story of her. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But also, Oscar Isaac is incredibly charming, so you can't really fault her if she does blush a little bit in front of him. There are a lot of people who are sort of getting on board with this really brief interaction in this ship, as they call it. And Daisy Ridley was posed a question about this, and which she responded very diplomatically. It's wonderful to have relationships that are not romantic. I don't think in films you always need a romantic relationship, hope, et cetera, et cetera. Hopefully, if Rey and Poe get to have some scenes together, there'll be intimacy. But for me, it doesn't have to be a romantic love. So I think she is kind of balking at the fact that she's the one female lead of this movie franchise. And she, of course, is being asked all the questions about her love interest, which I know is very infuriating. And I think my own sort of feminist beliefs are in contrast with my own shipping sort of mentality. But I agree with her to an extent. I think that maybe romance has always been the weakest part of the Star Wars movies, but at the same time, these cast members have such great chemistry with each other that it would feel like a waste not to take advantage of that. But at this point, it's all speculation. We don't know if J.J. Abrams will actually create a romance out of this, or maybe create a romance out of Finn and Poe, which was also a big talking point in Force Awakens. So, and who knows if they have time for romance at all, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like some big stuff is going on in the galaxy. But part of the reason why, in Force Awakens that I loved is, that Rey and Finn didn't have a kiss, and it wasn't, even though there was kind of like a bond between them, like, it didn't seem romantic to me. And I felt like that was, it felt like an un-Disney thing to do. And it's just interesting that everybody wants, the normal movie cliche thing to happen. they need a love story in the middle of this Star War.
I would be happy either way, with or without a love story.
And we are kind of getting the beginning of a love story with Finn and Rose.
Yes.
Although we don't know if that's a mutual thing at this point. One of them kissed the other, right? So,
yes.
Anyways, let's move on to Christian Bale. He's been giving some interviews recently, and he says he regrets Terminator Salvation. Ben, what do we know?
Yes, in an episode of the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast, Christian Bale was asked why he ended up taking the role of John Connor in McGee's 2009 film Terminator Salvation. And Bale revealed some information that I had never heard before, which is that he turned down the movie 3 times before he ultimately said yes, and that he ended up taking the gig in part to silence his haters, basically. So the quote was, "I said no 3 times. I thought that franchise... I went, nah, there's no story there." And he picks it up by saying, let's see, "It was an unfortunate series of events involving the writer's strike, involving Jonah Nolan, who was able to come on and really start to write a wonderful script. And he then got called away for a prior commitment that he had. It's a great thorn in my side because I wish we could have reinvigorated that franchise. And ultimately, during production, you could tell that wasn't happening. It's a great shame. And then he says, there's also a perverse side of me where people were telling me there's no way on God's earth that I should take that role. And I was thinking the same thing. But when people started verbalizing that to me, I started to go, oh, really? All right, well, watch this then. So there was a little bit of that involved in the choice, too. So it definitely seems like he took this role out of spite, like just to prove that he could do it. And I had completely forgotten about the fact that Jonah Nolan was involved with the script in those early days. So, you know, Bale had worked with Nolan before on both The Prestige and The Dark Knight at that point. So I can totally understand why he would think, okay, I'm going to do this because Jonathan Nolan is on board writing the screenplay and he's a smart guy and has delivered in the past. And I'm sure he'll be able to come up with something, you know, sort of on the fly, even if he doesn't have everything fully worked out right now. I can totally understand that, that thought process from Bale there. But then of course the whole thing about taking the role out of spite is like a little less defensible in my opinion.
Yeah. And I'm sure he also regrets that tirade that he went on against the cinematographer that went viral.
Yeah. Week. He called that a great learning lesson for him. So,
The lesson is do not allow recorders or phones on set. That is the lesson. Let's move on to Marvel and Black Panther. You know what? You know, I'm excited about Black Panther. I know a lot of people are, but these first films in these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, when you're introducing kind of a new character, not that he's being introduced, but this is the Thor 1 or the Spider-Man. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the first film. Usually doesn't do that well in comparison to, you know, the later sequels. But it turns out advanced ticket sales are selling more than any of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies so far. HD, what do we know?
So Black Panther has broken the record for the most advanced tickets sold on Fandango in its first 24 hours, besting the previous record holder, Captain America: Civil War. So this is huge. It hasn't even gone past its first 24 hours yet, but it's already beat all the past MCU movies in pre-sale tickets, which is a huge deal. And we don't know how indicative this is of its eventual box office opening estimates, but it is a good sort of litmus test for how well it'll do. Even though it's opening in February and is generally there are less audiences than in like the May or summer box offices, it could potentially be one of the bigger openings for Marvel.
Does this surprise either of you?
No, not at all. Definitely not. People have been like going crazy for this movie ever since it was first announced. Like, every casting announcement, every single addition to this cast, like, it seems like the whole of Twitter has just been aflame, you know, every single time somebody got added to this cast. And then, let alone, you know, all the trailers and stuff that have come out, people have just been going nuts for this movie. So I think this is going to take a lot of people by surprise who are not paying attention. But if you've been paying attention, none of this is surprising.
See, I always take film Twitter with a grain of salt because I always feel like, you know, it's smarter than the average general audiences. And, we want to see this movie with this great ensemble cast and great director. But I'm not sure, you know, Joe Nobody knows half of those people or even has seen Creed. Do you know what I mean?
I think it should be pointed out, though, that not only does Black Panther have the benefit of having the built-in Marvel audience, it also has a huge Black audience, which helped propel movies like Get Out and Girls Trip to huge success this past year. And they are definitely treating Black Panther as more than just a comic book movie, but as a bona fide cultural event. So this is a huge movie and one of the most anticipated movies of the year, according to a Fandango survey, right after Avengers Infinity War. But it's something that I think a huge portion of American audiences who don't usually get catered to are lining up to see and are definitely driving those pre-sale tickets.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how well this does at the box office. I would also point out that it seems like Disney has learned a lot from releasing these Star Wars movies and how to make the on-sale ticket date an event Do you know what I mean? Like, they are now, like, having these TV spots during, like, huge sport events announcing the on-sale tickets and making that that moment a big thing, which I don't think was happening before, you know, Star Wars movies. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, it'll be interesting to see how well it does. But let's go to the spoiler room. We're going to talk about some Star Wars, and we're going to talk about Westworld. But we'll talk about Star Wars first, since probably more people have seen Star Wars: The Last Jedi than have seen Westworld, which might not be the case, but I would assume. let's talk about Star Wars. HT, a new Star Wars comic explains how Rey has force powers, kind of?
Yes. So there are some new rules to the Force that were sort of introduced in The Last Jedi that infuriate a lot of longtime fans, because it basically suggests that the Force is all around us and that anyone really has access to the Force, because it is less a power source than it is like an energy and life source. Luke Skywalker defines it to Rey as the energy between all things, a tension, a balance that binds the universe together, rather than something that's exclusively for the Jedi or the Sith to use. And in a new Darth Vader comic written by Charles Soule and drawn by Giuseppe Camuncoli, it kind of doubles down on this new definition that we are seeing of the Force. And this is a comic book series that is set right after the events of the prequel trilogy, when following Darth Vader and his attempt to, with Emperor Palpatine, to rid the galaxy of the rest of the Jedi remnants. So here he is fighting Jacasa Nu, who is a former chief librarian of the Jedi Archives, who's one of the few Jedi to survive the Purge. So she and Darth Vader are having like a battle of philosophies as well as a physical battle. And she protests that he and Emperor Palpatine are trying to snuff out the light side of the Force, saying that it's impossible because, quote, "The Force is eternal. It cannot be ended. It cannot be stopped, not so long as life exists. It will find its vessels. It always does. It already has. You know this. There are others waiting out in the galaxy." So these vessels are people who are clearly destined for greatness, such as the Skywalkers, or just ordinary nobodies like Rey, as she calls herself in Last Jedi, because she doesn't really come from a great bloodline or anything. She just happens to have this great knack and intuition with the Force. Or Broom Kid. Broom Kid. Yeah, exactly. Anyone can be a vessel for the Force because it is all encompassing.
Yeah, I wanted to use this. Before I get into what I wanted to say, Ben, what do you think about this?
I mean, I love that aspect of The Last Jedi and how it sort of democratized the Force. I think we've talked about that probably enough on the show with my thoughts about that. I don't really want to bore people with it. But yeah, I love the idea of just like making it a thing that's attainable and accessible to everyone. So yeah, I'm all on board for that.
Right after The Last Jedi came out, I did give you my criticisms of The Last Jedi. But one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I don't think I've said this on the podcast, is how The Last Jedi kind of makes Force Awakens a worse movie. And I just wanted I have this whole theory. I might write it up for the set at some point. But one of the points of this is Rey's powers and her abilities. I understand the enthusiasm of Rey being a nobody, and that makes her not a Skywalker, and she's thus not a chosen one, and anybody could have these powers. That's like a great message to send out there. But at the same time, I remember when Force Awakens was released, Max Landis went online and had this whole diatribe about how Rey is the Mary Jane. And
Mary Sue,
and you know, it wasn't something I liked. I don't think any of us liked this whole argument that basically she just had powers and there was no you know, she was just given these powers with no I'm not sure how you define that, but she had no conflict in that, and there was no training, and there was no whatever. She just was awesome. And at the time, I was arguing that point that obviously she was trained early on in life. Obviously, she was probably part of this of Luke Skywalker's Jedi Academy. Maybe she was a Skywalker, maybe she wasn't. Maybe she was just, one of the kids at this Jedi Academy alongside Kylo. It didn't have to be that, she was from a famous bloodline, but she obviously had some training. But now that, Rian Johnson has made that not the case, Kylo tells her that she was just, some kid of these traitors that just dumped her on Jakku. To me, it kind of makes Force Awakens a worse movie, because while I understand Rey could easily swing a lightsaber and wield a lightsaber because she's used to defending herself with her bow staff, and I understand she, did flight simulators, so she had the power to fly the Millennium Falcon. Totally makes sense. I totally buy that. But it kind of bothers me that she's able to use this Jedi mind trick. And, she comes generations after the Jedi have been extinct and no one even knows about the Jedi mind trick. And yet she's able to, convince stormtroopers to, let her go and whatnot. And to me, before, it seemed more reasonable that she had some sort of training at the core. And now that seems to be proven not true, to me, Rey seems more like a chosen one than ever before, because she's kind of like just badass without any training. And even like when she's on Octu with Luke, Luke gives her, these three lessons, but essentially he's just standing off to the side watching her swing the lightsaber. The lessons aren't really that deep. I mean, they have her looking within herself, but it's not training in the usual sense of her actually learning things about the Force and how to use her abilities. So I guess what I'm saying, the thing that's bothering me, is that this choice to make her a nobody actually makes her more a chosen one than ever before, because she just was born badass with Force abilities and being able to do all this stuff. Do either of you have an argument against this line of thought that I'm going off of?
HT?
Listen, whenever people talk about Rey as a Mary Sue and that whole argument, I like to bring up baby Anakin Skywalker, who managed to build a robot butler when he was like 5 years old.
But he was immaculately conceived and was created by the Force. Oh, well, okay, I'm just... No, you're right. And, I don't want to get into the Mary Sue argument of things, because I don't like that whole thing, that whole concept. I feel like that's just bad.
Yeah,
I want to get more into, storyline-wise.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, her abilities never bothered me, because I always saw her as a really scrappy orphan who was forced to survive and fend for herself on this desert planet that was filled with traitors and thieves and everything like that. And as for the Jedi mind powers, it was just something that she had observed and then picked up really quickly. And it was something that never really lost me. I just kind of figured that she's talented, and maybe that doesn't mean she's a chosen one, but maybe that means she is especially tuned in with or sensitive to the Force, which I think is fine, in terms of that whole definition of the Force being democratized and being available to everyone. Maybe some people are more sensitive or attuned to it, and maybe some aren't. But anyone can rise above their station. And as for Rey, I think that maybe her circumstance did lead her to sort of be more powerful, because just living as and growing up as she did, it just required her to be more mature and stronger and mentally and physically. So that's kind of my reasoning for it. I never really saw it as she must have had training, because I think that there are so many ways that there's so many previous male protagonists we've seen before who have just picked up on things instantly, and we see it as just like a mark of their prowess. But here we have to dig into every tiny little facet of her skill set. And while yes, maybe it does sort of tug at that newly defined rules of the Force and that idea that she's not special or chosen one, I don't think it's something that loses me as a viewer.
I was
going to say, HT, you're kind of selling me a little bit because maybe, you know, growing up on Jakku and, you know, having to trade all that stuff that she scraps, maybe she noticed that she had the power of persuasion, mm-hmm. you know, in that process, but never understood that it was the Force. So maybe that is true. Ben, your thoughts?
I think HT said it really beautifully right there. For me, just something that I guess an analogy that has just popped into my head is in sports, there's this concept of being a natural at something, a natural talent, right? I'm wondering if it might be easier to sort of wrap your mind around, Peter, as like maybe thinking of Daisy Ridley as like, or of Rey specifically, the character of Rey, as like the best football player in a small town or something, right? Like you bounced around high school, maybe you're playing high school football, and there's always just this one person who is like way better than everybody else. This person seems, you know, preternaturally gifted, and a lot of times it's just like a natural born talent. Like it's this, you know, sometimes people just simply don't have to work as hard to be as good at things as other people do. But that does not necessarily mean that that person is a chosen one or like the greatest in her field or whatever, because then if you graduate and go on to play, I don't know, college football or something, there are, you know, everyone in that category is equally as talented as you are. So maybe we're just seeing it in a micro sense, you know, like this, maybe Rey and, you know, like maybe Broom Kid is an example of that, where, you know, a very small hint at that larger world. Maybe we're just seeing this really dialed in story of Rey, who happens to be the best player in her small town, but then the resistance at large as it forms and maybe grows in episode 9 could reveal that there are multiple people from all across the galaxy who are just as talented as Rey at using the Force, but we just haven't seen their stories told yet.
I mean, I love your sports analogy, but I'm wondering, like, you know, in your sports analogy, that person needs to be, you know, taught how to play basketball. Or how
that's
to play
the thing,
baseball,
though. Is like sometimes and... they don't. Sometimes really? It's just like it's so natural that you and sure, like for certain specific things, like you know, techniques
like
and things
like levitating
like that,
but, a bunch of rocks or.
But I think you can make the case that just so even if you take Luke and Rey's interactions with Luke completely out of the picture, which I would argue that maybe even being in his presence, she could have absorbed some of his knowledge and abilities, and maybe she skimmed through those Jedi books, you know, on the Millennium Falcon at some point.
That's possible.
But even pushing all of that stuff aside, I think just her natural skill set could very easily be, you know, maybe she doesn't know that it's called the Jedi mind trick, but I think she could easily come to the conclusion that she has those abilities on her own without having to see somebody else do it or be taught, you know, specifically how to hone that thing. I think like Kylo Ren and Star Wars is nothing if not all about balance. She has a raw talent, and that's just what we've seen so far.
I want to make another comparison to another sci-fi franchise that similarly dealt with this sort of illusion of the Chosen One story, Blade Runner 2049. So Ryan Gosling's character...
Wait, so are you going to give spoilers for Blade Runner 2049?
Possibly, yes. But
okay.
Vague spoilers.
So spoilers, vague spoilers for Blade Runner 2049 coming up.
So Ryan Gosling's character, Agent K, starts off the film believing he is fully a replicant and nothing else. But then throughout the film, he starts to get inklings that perhaps he is destined for something greater. Perhaps he is this chosen one, this mythical sort of child that everyone is searching for. And in sort of starting to believe that and in searching for his greater purpose and greater destiny, he becomes a better person and better ability and more just passionate about the mission that he's on. And even when that is sort of proven to be an illusion at the end, it still doesn't take away the fact that he was so much improved by this belief and that idea that he could be better, if that makes sense. I'm going to tie this into Rey in that, you know, so for so much of Force Awakens and Last Jedi, she believed to be someone special. She believed to be part of a greater destiny, and that drove her to be perhaps better and try to stretch her limits beyond what maybe she thought she was capable of, but she was always capable of from the beginning. And that's the idea of human will and that being powerful enough to make you skilled and perhaps make you a better Jedi master or whatever. So that's the extent of that idea that I just had. So I hope that makes sense in some way.
It totally does. When I was watching Blade Runner 2049, you know, a few months before Star Wars came out, I actually was like thinking to myself during the movie, I was like, this could be what Last Jedi is. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seemed like a way they could have gone with the story, but obviously they did not.
It's kind of similar. There are parallels. Similar,
yeah, yeah, for sure. I guess, I don't know. I guess I wish that Luke Skywalker actually saw him teaching her something of usefulness, well, and not just like these vagaries about the Force.
Another point I want to say is that Luke never completed his training with Yoda either before he went off to rescue Han and Leia and was swaggering around acting like he was a Jedi Master already. So
that's true.
He was never quite skilled either when he faced off with his mortal enemy and Darth and eventual father Darth Vader. So I think there has never been an emphasis on skill or anything like that in Star Wars. It's always been about reaching for the stars.
But at least in a montage, they showed Yoda training Luke and him learning
Even going back to the first time that Luke holds a lightsaber, I think Obi-Wan, you know, pulls out that little drone thing that shoots lasers at him. And like the second time he is able to deflect the laser blast with a blindfold on. So like, yeah, I guess you could argue that maybe that's because of his chosen one dynasty bloodline or whatever. But, you know, even before, that's way before he had Yoda training or anything like that. And he was still, you know, exceptionally talented at the ways of the Force.
I love this idea of there not being a chosen, you know, Rey's not the chosen one. I just wish that the story reflected that more, because I feel like if that was the big thing about this trilogy, I wish that, you know, she had to struggle and earn it more than we've seen. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel...
It always just kind of came easy to her.
Yeah, and in this movie, I loved her in Force Awakens, but in this movie, it's a lot of her listening to guys talk to her, which is kind of bothering. You know, it's not her doing or being proactive as much. And when she is, she's, you know, running to Kylo or I don't know. It just I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say. Now I'm starting to sound like Max Landis, and that's not my intention. I guess we've said enough. I guess people have probably gotten what I was trying to convey. And I think you guys did a good job at arguing otherwise. I think you've actually gotten some thoughts in my head on how that works and how you would explain it.
And that's another thing, Peter, is like, this is only the second entry in this trilogy. So who knows, maybe, you know, maybe Abrams will show something in the third movie that sort of recontextualizes Rey's journey and what we've seen and how she fits into the Force in a larger way. And what that particular relationship is like. So it's always tough to sort of judge a trilogy when you've only seen two thirds of it, you know?
Oh, for sure. And let's get to our last item in the spoiler room. So if you have not seen Westworld season two, if you have not seen Westworld season one, you might want to turn this off right now, because we're going to be talking about some surprising Westworld season two casting. Should we leave you here, or are you okay with sticking around for this?
I'll go. I haven't watched Westworld, but I know everything that happens. But I'll head out.
Okay. HD, where can people find more of your work online?
You can find me at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at htranbowie.
Okay, so we have some Westworld Season 2 casting, the return of Jimmy Simpson. Ben, what do we know?
Yes, so at the Television Critics Association Winter Press Tour, Jimmy Simpson, who was there to promote a whole different show, was asked, of course, about Westworld because it was like one of the biggest shows of 2016, and he was asked if he was going to be coming back for Season 2, and he said, I thought it was already a thing, but now that you're asking me, I'm going to shut up. And then when pressed even further, he said, I mean, yeah, I pop in. So he definitely comes back to play William in Westworld Season 2. The reason that this is sort of spoilery and interesting is because the very end of the first season of Westworld reveals that Jimmy Simpson is playing a younger version of the Man in Black, the character that's played by Ed Harris. We know that Ed Harris survived Dolores' robot uprising at the very end of that season because we've seen him in the Season 2 trailer. And we know that I think he was shot, right, Peter, at the very end?
I think so.
But like just maybe like a shot in the arm or the leg or something, not like a mortal wound. So we had a feeling that the character of William was going to be coming back in Season 2. But now we know that Jimmy Simpson's version of William is also going to be coming back. So I guess what that means is we're probably going to see more flashbacks, although they won't be as hidden as they or obfuscated as they were in the first season, because Season 1 went out of its way, arguably to its detriment, to try to conceal the reveal that that Jimmy Simpson's version of William and the Man in Black were the same person. But also, I sort of like what Jacob Hall, who wrote this article for SlashFilm.com, I like what he theorizes here in his piece. He suggests that maybe it means that Jimmy Simpson could be playing a robot version of William, of like the younger William, and how that might sort of rattle Dolores, who has obviously had many experiences with both versions of this character over the years.
Yeah, I know in the viral stuff, there's a whole contract you have to sign to go to Westworld, in that they do take your DNA and you do give over the rights to your DNA. So it is conceivable that could be a storyline. I mean, I wouldn't put that beyond beyond Jonathan Nolan. I mean, what if they did that and you thought it was a flashback all along, and then it's revealed that it's taking place at that time and he's a robot?
Yeah. I think they've said, and correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, because you're way big of a much bigger Westworld fan than I am. But I think they've said that they're not going to try to like trick the audience quite as much, because they were impressed with how quickly, you know, Reddit and all those sites sort of figured things out. I think the second season of the show is supposed to have like a different feel to it and not be quite as, you know, purposefully mysterious in that way.
I mean, that's what they would say if they were going to do it, right?
Yes, that's a fair point. Fair point.
So, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how he fits in there, because I'm wondering, we've kind of seen his storyline, like a young William storyline, to its completion, I think.
Yeah, it felt pretty complete to me after the first season. So I'm not really sure what going back and revisiting that character at an earlier point in the timeline will add to the story, unless it's just because Jimmy Simpson says that he quote unquote pops in. So maybe it's just a very, very small appearance, you know, just maybe it's like one flashback in one episode or something like that for like a key moment. But other than that, I'm not really sure. Like you said, what else could be added to seeing him again in that earlier version?
I'm very curious of what Westworld Season 2 is going to be. Ben, do we know when Westworld Season 2 is going to premiere? They haven't even announced that yet, have they?
I think it comes back in the spring, and that's all we know at this point.
Spring. Okay, very cool. Ben, where can we find more of your work online?
You can track me down at slashfilm.com, and you can find me on Twitter at BenPears.
You can find me at slashfilm.com, at slashfilm on Twitter. You can find this podcast, Slash Film Daily, published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. If you have a question, comment, concern for us, send it to peter@slashfilm.com. And please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention it on the air. Please go to iTunes and give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. Spread the word, tell your friends, and we will see you tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.